The Koi Gig Pod.
I'm going to have people with torches and pitchforks outside my door with this next question. But anyways, here we go.
Our version of the Ronaldo effect. You okay, hon?
I'm not good. I won't lie.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig Pod on the Off The Ball app now.
Football on Off The Ball.
With William Hill. Prepare for greatness during the Euros. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Time for us now to have a look ahead to tonight's European Championship qualifier in Group A3, which is very delicately poised towards the top. England, the host against Ireland, sit in third place currently, the reigning European champions. They're on 7 points. Second place, Sweden, are level with them, but ahead on goal difference. And France lead the way on 9 points, ahead of coming to Cork next week to play against the Republic of Ireland. So you've got England against Sweden this coming Tuesday, and only the two top teams will go directly to the finals in Switzerland. So England have got a huge need to try and win this game this evening. Ireland will be finishing the group irrespective of their results over the next two games. Cathy McNamee, host of the Koi Gig Pod, is with us. She's going to be at Carrow Road this evening as well. 27,000 expected to be in for this one, Kathleen. And I guess we're in a bit of emotion around England at the moment. They'll be hoping their men's team can follow the example of the women's side by winning a European Championship on Sunday. And this turns into a fairly crucial qualifier for the hosts as well.
Yeah, I was joking with Eileen Gleeson yesterday that's between us and the Spanish to ruin England's party this weekend. And she just laughed and said, we won't be thinking about that. But yeah, as you said, it's a really crucial game for them. It's a really crucial game for us as well, despite the fact that we'll be finished in the group. We're kind of in a race with Poland at the moment in terms of that playoff qualifying and getting a better seed in that group whenever we do get out the other side of it. So we, whatever about England wanting to make sure that they get their position, we're also going to be wanting to try and keep that scoreline down as much as possible, because at the moment our goal difference is better than Poland's by about 3, and they're going into two games as well that are probably similar enough to ours where they wouldn't be expected necessarily to nick a win or even a draw. So that goal difference is going to be really, really crucial.
Yeah, and look, there's a chunk of ranking points which are available as well when you're going up against the beaten World Cup finalists and the current European champions too. And, you know, as we look towards future campaigns and also, you say, the playoff series, nicking something against England could be very valuable on those ranking points as well.
Oh, it'd be absolutely massive. I think even for this team, because it's been such a tough qualifying journey so far, and look, we knew whenever we saw the group that we were in that it was going to be tough. We thought maybe those Sweden games we might be able to get something out of them, just because we have been able to do that in our recent history against them. That obviously didn't happen, and it was pretty heartbreaking in the end, especially that second leg. But I think for this team, even just being able to score a goal would be a massive sign of this is the football that Eileen Gleeson is getting them to play, is working. You know, we're making positive moves in the right direction. And I think that is true. It's just really frustrating that we haven't been able to get that one goal, because we kind of felt like after the World Cup, where we struggled with it as well, we hadn't, the League B campaign scored quite a few goals, but obviously the opposition was very, very different. So I think if we could see some of that positivity tonight, it would be great. Now, that comes with a caveat too, that Kira Carusa, who's generally leads our forward line, she's not there. Katie McCabe, who you'd always expect to be one to pop up for a goal, she's also not there. So we're putting that in the hands of people who are, I don't want to say unproven, because I don't think that's technically true. I mean, you look at what Leanne Kiernan has been able to do in the WSL at Liverpool, and we know when she gets into form, she can be incredibly dangerous. But I suppose just in an Irish context, we haven't really seen someone step up quite yet and be that person that is our out-and-out goal scorer, or even from our set pieces as well, which is normally something that we're quite good at nicking a goal from.
Yeah, I mean, look, the absentees, as you mentioned, Katie McCabe suspended, Heather Payne is that Achilles issue, and Caruso has been ruled out with a hamstring problem. The plus side to this is Denise Sullivan's back after missing the Sweden games. Like, that's a big boost, particularly when Katie McCabe's creativity has been stolen away for this game as well.
Yeah, that's a massive boost for us. Obviously, she's so important to the team. She's captaining the team as well on the game today. I'd be kind of surprised if she didn't captain the team next week as well, since she's in Cork. You kind of think Katie might hand the armband over to her, just since it's a home game, which don't come around too often. I think the thing with Denise, and probably the frustrating thing from an Irish point of view, is that because of the caliber of players around her compared to whenever she plays over in the States, She doesn't have the opportunity to be that really brilliant, creative midfielder that we've seen her play in the States, because, and you listen to previous like World Cup winners or like brilliant players that have played alongside her and say that she is one of the best that they have ever played alongside. And I'm sure a lot of the Irish players would be the same, but because the role we require from her is different, we don't get to see a bit of that pizzazz. And so I think even again tonight, it's brilliant to have her back. I just wish we had a setup where you could unleash her in her best sort of form and not have her doing so much work and so much running. Because I think sometimes her and Katie fall into the trap of feeling like they have to do everything on the pitch and end up running around in multiple different positions. And sometimes that's what's required of them from the team. But it would just be nice to get to see her in full flow.
Do we expect the tactical blueprint to be similar to either Sweden away or France away? Like, I think France away was probably the extreme when it came to being very defensive and about trying to stop the opposition. They offered a bit more in the Sweden game. What do you think is going to be closer to tactically? Because I think Eileen Gleeson has been very honest in the way that she's set up away from home so far.
Yeah, I think in all likelihood, it will be that more defensive setup. Whenever we were talking to her after the squad announcement, she kind of implied, you know, because people were obviously asking about Kira Caruso not being there. Is it an opportunity to change up the attack a little bit more and maybe go for things a bit more? And she brought up the Poland example and the goal difference. And she was like, look, this is what we're dealing with at the moment. I don't expect anything wild or different to change. So I would assume that it is going to be more of a defensive setup. And then maybe that lone person up the front in the hope that we can maybe get a quick break, or that person manages to get away with the ball and get it in the back of the net, which is, I mean, I kind of go back and forth on it, because obviously we've seen them play more attacking style football in these last couple of games. And I think that's been really positive, but it's just we haven't been able to keep it up. And that's something that Eileen has admitted herself. And you can definitely see it's in each game, it's happening for longer and longer. But I don't know what the best thing to do is after we get out of this group. You know, if we go into a playoff and we're playing against a team that's maybe a bit more around our sort of level, do you try that attacking football a bit more, or do you stick to the more conservative, more defensive that has treated us so well? So for me, that's going to be really interesting once we get out of these really, really tough games, what way she falls down in her footballing philosophy.
Yeah, because okay, in a way, I remember we talked after the Nations League and it was such a saunter with the teams that they played there, and they were able to play this wonderful attacking football, and in a way, it sets expectation that that's what's going to happen. And then the minute that draw was made and that it was three of the four semi-finalists from the last European Championships, it couldn't really have worked out any worse, because it's gone almost from one extreme to another. And we can see there is a sizable gap between some of the teams in League B and these teams that we'll call League A here.
Yeah, Emma Duffy and I from the 42 were joking yesterday that we needed a League B plus just to kind of like get the gap between playing the best teams in the world and then also absolutely hammering everyone we were playing in League B. I think everyone, whenever that draw came out, I remember talking to Louise Quinn and she said she just laughed when it happened, because she was like, when in the world would you go into a tournament or a qualifying process and end up with all those teams? You know, you look at some of the other groups and the teams that are in there are ones that we would probably expect to get some sort of a result against. I think the thing with this is that that qualifying process, and if we get to the Euros, that probably will be the kind of broaching of the two sides that we need. Well, hopefully anyways, if we get to the Euros, we don't end up in a group like we have for the qualifying process. That would be quite upsetting. I think that qualifying process after this, the playoffs, that'll probably be that middle ground that we need. And we saw it last year whenever we played Wales and they'd just come down from League A, and we thought that like we were going to, you know, at least be on level with them, if not beat them, and they ran rings around us. And I think it was because we hadn't really come up against the opposition that we needed to. So I'm curious as to, that's why I kind of said before how I'm curious when we go into this playoff stage, what will we actually see of the learnings from the last couple of games, from actually getting compared to the opposition that we're playing, we've actually done reasonably well in terms of the score lines and how low we've kept them. So what is that going to translate to when we do play other teams?
Yeah, around that Wales game with Ciara Grant, she was talking to us about, you know, how much Niamh Fahey was missed. So obviously Niamh Fahey is back here. We'll talk about another Galwegian in Julianne Russell in a moment. But having Fahey back in, even while the defence has been changing and Patton and a few other new players have come in, her experience still feels quite crucial to this squad right now.
It really does. And I think the leadership element is really important too. I know I mentioned before that I felt like McCabe hasn't had some of her best games in a green jersey recently. And I don't know, did she have some of her best leadership games as well? You know, she was getting very visibly frustrated on the pitch. She was getting angry at players. And I feel like having characters like Niamh Fahey in there, Louise Quinn, Denise O'Sullivan as well, just having those other leaders that can kind of pull people together and be like, come on, guys, you know, this actually isn't going as badly as we expected it to be. We need to push on a little bit here. I mean, Niamh, before the Italy game, the friendly at the start of the year, she came back and everyone was like, oh, you know, are you going to retire soon? Injuries are racking up. It's been a difficult time. And she played absolutely incredibly. And she got injured then and we were missing her for the next game, the Wales one. And you could just see how much we were missing her on the pitch. So it is funny how she's obviously a player that's in the latter stages of her career, but she's still so essential to that defence. Because if you think about it, the Irish team, the squad, as much as it's been built around Katie McCabe, it's also been built around that back four and the towering figures of the likes of Louise Quinn and Niamh Fahey. So we are coming to a new generation now. And I think, you know, the likes of Anna Patton and Caitlin Hayes, sorry, name escaped me there, from Celtic, they've come in and I think they've done a really positive job, but there's still just a certain certainty that you feel in your heart where you see Niamh Fahey's name all coming through on a lineup.
Oh, definitely. And look, I mentioned already, like Julianne Russell's coming in, a huge experience previously, having won 60 caps, but having been away for the best part of 5 years and now back into the squad again. And like, I saw some of the photos that appear quite positive. She's been there with her young child at the hotel in Castleknock as well. So lovely to see her back in the squad again.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. Karen paid a really nice tribute to her on the Koi Gig podcast this week because they're very good friends. But I think what the Julianne story shows you is that we need to think about the league here a little bit differently. You know, it's not like she's been plucked from obscurity because, as you say, she has the 60 caps. She was in the team for a long time before. But I think whenever we look at the league, we always look at the younger players. And those are the ones that we go to say, oh, could they potentially go into the Ireland squad? And we don't maybe necessarily consider the fact that there's someone there who could be in their late 20s, early 30s, who just happened to be hitting the form of their life. And I think if this under 23s squad does actually eventually materialise, that can be a really positive thing as well, because it will help players who maybe necessarily didn't get that like high level training in that gap between the 19s and the seniors to get that positive experience, get training from high profile coaches and get the experience that just isn't there at the moment. And I think it's just, yeah, it's the Julianne Russell story to me is A, brilliant on a personal level. And I also think it's great as well for anyone who's become a mother to show that, you know, you can get back to that peak level if you want to and if you choose to. But it also is a really great story for the league. And I think the league needs those kind of stories because I think that FAI hasn't really done a great job of capitalizing on the World Cup buzz and the buzz around the squad in general when it comes to the league. Definitely, you know, having the games in the Aviva and the women are generally front and center bar this week, which we won't get into the men's manager stuff again. But, you know, the announcement maybe wasn't the best thing for the team, but they haven't done anything at all for the league really in the time since, and I think that's been really disappointing.
Yeah, because I was kind of wondering for you, if you were say at a blank canvas and could go to the FAI right now, because we think about it, it's almost a year to the day really since the end of the World Cup in Australia, or at least our group campaign kicked off around this time, so about 12 months ago to the first couple of games. Like, what would you have done differently, say, with the Women's League of Ireland on the back of that? Because we've seen in other countries, and England's right next door, that they had this surge in popularity in women's soccer particularly, but women's sport got a big uplift off the back of it. What would you have done with the league differently, say, heading into the end of last year and into this year, compared to maybe what wasn't done?
I think about whenever England won the Euros and I was over here reporting on it and the difference that made in particular to the league. It was like overnight people discovered women's football and it just got this massive boost. But what they were constantly doing was they were off the back of every game. They were advertising, you know, key players. It's a little bit different in the sense that obviously the clubs themselves could chuck a bit of money behind it. And, you know, if Arsenal wanted to do something about Beth Mead, they could put a massive poster up about her or whatever. But they were constantly, all their messaging to do with the Euros and the win was all tied back to the home league. And I just haven't seen anything at all. You know, why aren't the likes of Anya O'Gorman, like the poster woman for the league? She's just gone to a World Cup I know she retired afterwards, but it's an opportunity to go see a World Cup player. Why are we not, you know, having the World Cup squad turn up to key games in the league to like try and boost people's attendances and come, you know, getting Katie McCabe to talk about the league a little bit more through her role as like captain with the captain of the Ireland squad. You know, there's just so much stuff. Even the under 23 squad, like why did we get rid of home based sessions for the Ireland squad and then not have anything in place to replace it already? And there's no timeline for that squad to actually come in. So anyone who is at home at the moment isn't actually getting that international experience or the opportunity to show themselves apart from in their weekly games. Now, I know Eileen Gleeson is very good at attending those league games and keeps a close eye on them because obviously she has such experience with it previously and even in her role as head of women and girls football. But it just feels like the FAI expected that the World Cup would happen and then the surge would just come. And I know there has been a boost since then, but it doesn't really feel like from a marketing point of view or from any point of view of increasing attendances or increasing viewing figures that they've put all that much work into it.
And even for future-proofing further down the line, as you say with Eileen Gleeson, where Eileen was effectively, before she becomes the manager, was going to be kind of that bridge for the FAI in many ways between the youth teams and the senior teams. So she's almost the perfect person to be overseeing that. But say if for whatever reason she was to leave that role and say, as has happened previously, a manager comes in from outside, then straight away you've stripped something away that potentially could have been a good landing ground for players who want to stay here a little bit longer and to still get that experience and training to be in the shop window. If that ends up disappearing, and as you say, there's no great timeline for home-based squads and home-based under-23s coming back in, potentially it becomes an issue further down the road, even if it isn't right now.
Yeah, it definitely does. And as you say, it's about ensuring that future teams and future squads are well-supported on a national level too. You know, we've seen it on the men's side and how there was that dependence on players going into the Premier League and the Championship, but things not really being developed here and how much that stopped the pipeline of talent coming through for a while. You know, I know for a fact that there's like two or three players in the league at the moment who will all either be playing WSL or Championship either this season or maybe after the January window. You know, there's a lot of superstars coming out of that league, but just because some people may not want to go over to England and play in the Championship or play in the WSL, it doesn't mean that they shouldn't be given the opportunities. And it's something Karen and I talk about quite a lot on the Koi Gig podcast, because she's very strong of the feeling that, yes, the league will always be seen as a bit of a feeder league to leagues in England and maybe even mainland Europe at some stage if we kind of change up how we think about things. But also, that doesn't mean that we should discount all the other people who want to play in Ireland, want to grow the game here, want to enjoy the game here. And I think you're right in the sense that Eileen, you know, it was always a criticism of Vera that she would never really go to games here. And obviously she wasn't based here too. So that was like a bit of a challenge. But it does just take one person to come in the other side who doesn't hold as much of an interest in growing the game and is just interested in the national team, which technically isn't right or wrong either. But you kind of want someone who's interested in the whole project. And it's kind of what the FAI wants too, if with what they said when they launched their new kind of project and idea for football in Ireland. You know, they want someone that thread that goes all the way through from grassroots right up to the national team. So ensuring that we have the right systems in place is going to be super important. And you want to believe in the FAI, but I suppose they can be a hard group to believe in sometimes with some of the evidence that we've seen from them in the past.
Yeah. Well, look, the proof is in what actually happens with the structures over the next while. England tonight. So despite the fact that, you know, they're having to get results in the last two games, it is still very much in their own hands because France and Sweden can't get maximum points in the other fixture. And England still will have it in their own hands going into that Sweden game next week. They probably have to expect that France are going to get a positive result against Ireland at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. So England, I won't say their backs are up against the wall, but they need to deliver now in these last two games.
Yeah, they need to deliver. And it's not a position I think they expected themselves to be in. They went into this group stage like very, very confident about what they would be able to do. And like, why wouldn't they? The evidence is there from previous times that, you know, getting all the way to the World Cup final and stuff. I think for England tonight, they're obviously missing Lauren James, so that's probably the only big name off their roster at the moment. Mary Earps has recovered in time. Neve Charles isn't fully fit, but Serena Wiegmann reckons that she'd still be able to play part of the game. I think the big thing for them will be, yes, getting that result, but also sending out a message to Sweden and France about where they're at in their team and kind of, you know, saying to them, you know, don't let your guards down because we're still here and we're still roaring if you were to go for the Lionesses comparison. I think as well, we've seen an interesting change in Serena Wiegmann where she was very, very strict on what her starting team would be and who her squad was. And over the last couple of campaigns, she's kind of changed that up a little bit and let in a few more players and changed up her squads a little bit more. So for me, that's what I'm interested to see tonight, is that does she go for that full strength team, or knowing that it is Ireland that we're playing against and we're obviously in two very different zones of class, does she then decide to maybe give some players a bit of a break? I feel like she's going to go full strength, to be honest, but I'm still interested.
Well, look, it'll all play out over the next couple of hours. Kathleen, enjoy Carrow Road. Enjoy this qualifier between England and Ireland, and we'll chat soon.
Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Prepare for greatness during the Euros. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.